a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Blog Roundtable. The crew is here in studio. Before we get started, I just want to go over to Craig Ross, who is an attorney as well. I want to make it clear. By no means, was the purpose, was the intent of that, of that last segment, the exercise that we went through with Joe about that case at Penn State. It wasn't about excusing the behavior or trying to get them off. It was about determining what their defense could be, what defense could they offer. And I'm responding specifically to a message that said, this is gross. What if that was your son? Why are you offering up a defense?
Well, if it was your son who was in trouble, you sure as hell should want him to get the best, representation possible. Joe's a really fine attorney, and that's what you'd want. And, it's part of our system. It's ingrained in the system.
That everyone's entitled to a defense.
And it's been a long time since I've done it, but in the distant past, I did criminal defense work. And I would say about half the people that I had, I thought, were innocent.
At least half
of them were innocent of people that cases I was involved in. Mm-hmm. And that included murder cases and things of that sort.
But you still defended the guys that you thought were guilty, too.
Sure. I mean, although we tried to plead them.
if we thought they were guilty, that was the deal.
Joe comes in, and Joe looks really, he's younger than me. Everybody's younger than me. But Joe comes in, he's like dressed, he's like got his hair cut. damn, he looks good. It looks good. He doesn't look like us. There's a qualitative difference. I'm not sure what that's all about.
Folks, Craig Ross is an outstanding attorney. Let me tell you, I've had, three or four contracts now, and Craig Ross has been my go-to. So don't let him sit here and make you think that he isn't really good at what he does. Craig Ross is really good at what he does.
On days when I'm not drooling.
The rest of the roundtable crew, Brian Cook, who said, "Don't ever call me to be a morning host."
No. I did it once. I filled in for you once, and that was enough. I was like, this is not who I am.
New definition for one and done.
Yeah.
Right?
I never told Ira. Ira just knew. Ira was like,
I pick up quickly on people that can't or don't like the coming in the mornings.
Right. Yeah. I was like, sorry, Ira.
I don't blame you.
But hey, we'll take what we can get, and we get every single Thursday. For two-thirds of the year, we'll take it, Brian.
All right.
Appreciate it. All right. And then, of course, none other than Ed Fang. Ed, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Sam?
Doing great. Glad that you could join us, as always, here on the MGo Blog Roundtable from the Power Rank. Tell us what you got going on the Power Rank right now.
Yeah. Had a great interview with Peter Jennings. He's a daily fantasy sports player on the Football Analytics Show.
Peter Jennings?
Yeah, you know him?
I don't know that Peter Jennings. I know
the broadcaster.
You gotta
Google Peter Jennings DFS to find his stuff, but he's a super successful guy. And it was interesting because it was one of, I usually know what my guests are up to. I know their work, and I didn't really in this case because there wasn't a lot out there. So it was a super fun interview, and it was very clear from talking to him why he's been so successful.
Gotcha. All right, so guys, we'll spend a little time on Maryland, and we'll go on to Wisconsin, because one of these things is not like the other, right? The Wisconsin game is nothing like, not just last week, the last 3 weeks.
Yes.
For Michigan football. So, Brian, your take on the victory over Maryland.
It was the same as the previous two victories over Rutgers, and I even forget the other team. I don't know. It's just the same. So, I got to write about all this stuff that's going on, and I'm just like, I already wrote this 2 weeks in a row. go read that, and we're done.
Did you get on MGO blog the sort of talk from your readers about, hey, you know, this team in the second half, it's concerning that you know, they weren't able to continue with the same momentum from the first half. Did you get that? Did you get that at all?
You know, a little bit. I mean, probably a lot, actually. I don't necessarily entirely disagree with it either. Like, you have some opportunities to convert on third and short that you don't get done. And you see Michigan give up some chunk plays on the ground, which is a little bit concerning going into Wisconsin. So, to some extent, that's a critique that I actually agree with. But, of course, you know, there are people who take it a little bit too far.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I look at it like it was a new experience for this team to have a substantial lead at the break.
No. They stood the last 2 weeks.
I mean, just, you know, to absolutely, you know, just be owning a team on the road in their house. They don't have their fans there. It looks like a Michigan game for the most part. And I think there was maybe a little less, what did you call it? You called it vigor? Maybe there was a little less
no,
vigor.
No, but that's a good one, too.
Well, I mean, focus, right?
Yeah, a little less focus coming out of the break.
I mean, so there's like a third and three, and Peters has Chris Evans open on a little mesh route, and he doesn't find him. Is that focus, or is that just a freshman quarterback? I couldn't tell you. But, you know, they had kind of a bad combination of they had a couple of three and outs, and then they gave up some extended drives to Maryland, none of which actually got in the end zone until the fourth quarter. And, you know, to some extent, you know, this is the third straight week this has happened. You're looking ahead to Wisconsin. You're looking ahead to Ohio State. And, you know, the pattern of the last 3 weeks is Michigan has some cool stuff in the playbook until they get up two or three scores, and then they just go vanilla the rest of the way. And against Minnesota, that's the other team. It was Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Against Minnesota and Rutgers, those defenses were so bad that Michigan could just pave those two opponents. Maryland was a step up. They're not good as a rush defense, but they're not abject. So they were able to contain Michigan a little bit. And then they had some good plays of their own in the third quarter.
I have a question. You know, we talked about this last week, is that Michigan in the prior week ran one or two maybe zone plays. And this week they ran quite a few zone. They went. I wouldn't say heavy zone, but they went with a lot of zone. And I wonder. I mean, two things. One is, I wonder if that was just something they felt would be more effective against Maryland.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I only charted the second half of this game. By the time we got, the first half. By the time we got the second half, I was like, dude, I'm not doing. Yeah. I'm not doing this. But I took note of, man, they're running more inside zone this week.
So they had 10 zone plays and 16 gap plays that. And I leave out the edge runs, which are there mm-hmm. four. And was the consistent pattern until last week, where about 40% of their inside running plays were zone and 60% were gap. And you have to do that as an offense, because if you don't have two different base run plays that you're running, your base run play will get downloaded and all you have is the frippery around it. So if you are running zone and power or inside zone and outside zone like an Iowa does, then there are two main options on any play, and the opposition can't just expect some approach. So Michigan does need to run inside zone. They do need to run it enough so that the opponent can't tee off on power. And 40% is a little high for like that kind of second play. Sometimes it could be 20 or 30%. But you do have to have that in your pocket.
Although we ran almost none of it against Minnesota, right?
Yes.
Now Minnesota might be such a meatball run defense that it didn't matter.
Yes.
So did you chart effectiveness in zone plays?
Yeah, they actually averaged more yards per carry on zone plays in part because Chris Evans had a couple of really nifty runs on those. So his last touchdown, I thought was really impressive because there's a guy charging right at him. And he's actually kind of juked behind a guy to set up his first touchdown. And on his second touchdown, he kind of threatens that with a little shimmy, which holds that guy, and then he explodes into the original hole. And he managed to set up two or three guys with that little shimmy, where the intent was never to, like, cut back, but just to, like, maybe I can make this hole better if I make this little move. Mm-hmm. He's been really good the last few weeks. Both obvious things like jumping over dudes and then more subtle stuff like just that little tweak in the backfield to make that run that could have been a tackle for a loss into a touchdown.
The other thing is that the two teams that have run it against Wisconsin this year were both zone teams. Northwestern and Illinois, surprisingly, both were able to run fairly effectively against Wisconsin. So I thought maybe they're making sure they have some zone in their offense.
Well, Iowa's zone
terrible.
Team,
yeah, I know. Iowa's a zone team, too.
Well, Iowa was on the biggest letdown after the Ohio State win. So.
Oh, my God. They couldn't do anything in that game.
I mean, there's letdown in the 60 years of offense.
But
right. 41-yard passing
but
in a game?
Ed's point is a good one. I mean, you look at Michigan State and Ohio State and Penn State play a huge game at CBUS, and then both teams go off on the road the following week, and they both lose, and they both have bad games. And so playing a big game, and then the following week sort of filtering off onto the road. If you look at teams this year, and not just in the Big Ten, they've had trouble.
Yeah, it does seem to be a pattern to it this year.
Well,
for sure.
I think a large part of that is like you have all this stuff you haven't shown in your playbook yet, and you save it up for a big game like Michigan, Penn State, and Penn State has all this stuff that they haven't put on film yet. Michigan gets got by it, but if it's gimmicky stuff, it is gimmicky stuff, then the subsequent opponents have seen it. It's not as effective, and you see Saquon Barkley is. Unable to do anything in the last month except that one game against Michigan where he breaks out because they have that Wildcat package they haven't shown before.
Most overrated back since Rod Dane.
Come on, Craig.
He is overrated. And
I do appreciate the Rod Dane is overrated shout out because that's true. Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah. You think he's the most overrated back since Rod Dane?
No, I thought Rod Dane was overrated. Yeah, he's crazy. Overrated. Like Craig's insane.
So I mean,
wait, you had Barkley for Heisman about 4 weeks ago, right?
No, I've been saying I've been saying all along that he was overrated last year. I'm not saying he's a bad back. I'm just saying whoever drafts him in the first round of the draft is wasting their pick.
I don't believe that.
Well, I mean, as long as he doesn't get taken in the top 10, where you could get.
He will be.
A more replaceable type player.
It'll be the Browns. It'll be
possible. Well, the Browns are probably changing their entire front office.
If the Browns do take him, then I suddenly agree with Craig, by the way.
So he had some big runs on that Wildcat. The Michigan, that's one of the things.
He had one.
You've seen with Michigan, there had been a play here or there on the ground. There was a play here or there on the ground last week. Is there a consistent theme to that? From what you've seen here in recent weeks?
Yeah, it's usually one defensive lineman who isn't able to maintain his gap. Against Penn State, it was often Brian Monet. Once it was Rashawn Gary. In the Maryland game, it was actually Hurst a couple times, and I don't know. And that's like the second half. I have to assume that that's just kind of like a playing out the string kind of thing in a game when you're up 28-0, because he was very explosive, but there are a couple times where he just gets locked out and there's a big gap on the backside. So
linebacker play more. I mean, defensive line play more than linebacker play.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, there was the Wildcat thing against Rutgers where Bush goes the wrong way and they kick a touchdown. But you know, for the most part, the linebackers are in the right spot. For the most part, the defensive linemen are in the right spot. But when you play an aggressive defense like this, all it takes is one guy to get out of position, and then the guys to the secondary.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, speaking about the linebacker play, I thought Mike McCray had some pretty good coverage on Ty Johnson that one play. So, and that's
yeah,
a pretty
he covered
back.
A wheel route for the first time.
Hey, that's
ever.
Good. That's good. I mean, that's not a slouch either, right?
No. I mean, it's good to see. I've been eagerly awaiting that moment, and we saw it. It was wonderful.
So I've been eagerly awaiting it, and you can kind of give us a preview of a more detailed analysis on the other side, Craig. But how good is Wisconsin?
Nobody knows.
It's hard to say. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a different team from last year.
I said Craig. I meant Ed. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. It's a different team from last year. Last year they couldn't run the ball like Wisconsin teams normally do, and that obviously hampers. You know, your ability to throw this year, it's completely different. They're running with explosive efficiency with Taylor. And yeah, I understand, you know, the defense that they played haven't been great, but it's a different team. And the defense is still good.
All right. Well, we'll dig into it more on the other side because who you do it against is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you see Wisconsin, some games look overpowering, look like they are a legit playoff team. And then others, it's like, oh, really? I mean, they look like they certainly can be gotten. We'll break down some of their other contests this year. And then Alex Hornibrook, last year when he played Michigan, early in his career as a starter, but you saw the poise. You felt like he was, going to be really good. And this year he's been good at times, but more turnovers than I expected from him in his second year at the helm. We'll get into that as well. On the other side here, on the Michigan Insider, MGo Blog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, the ticket. All right, before we get to the phones, because we're going to go to Eddie and Callie, who's been waiting patiently on hold, I want you to finish the thought there, Ed, for a minute and really focus on a couple of games that kind of stick out to me. I said, hey, you look at some of the outcomes for Wisconsin this year, and you're like, they look really, really good. I mean, but some of these other ones, 17-9 over Purdue, 24-10 over Illinois. I look at games like that and I just scratch my head a little bit. How does a team as good as Wisconsin is supposed to be wind up in tight games with teams like that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's no excuse for the Illinois game. They probably played one of their worst games against, luckily, one of their worst opponents. They dominated yardage-wise against Purdue. That score line should have been a lot bigger. And, I think they're a good team. Good teams have bad games, as we've seen from just about everyone in college football this year. And we'll see which, I expect on average to see the pretty good Wisconsin team on Saturday.
As do I. Let's go to the phones at 734-998-1050 and talk to Eddie and Callie. Eddie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Roundtable. What's happening? Greetings from the Golden State. How you guys doing?
Great.
Pretty good.
Hey, first of all, just thanks for all the insight. Living away from Michigan, it's pretty cool to listen to the show. Love the show, particularly love this segment. What I want to ask the Roundtable, though, what do you foresee the Wolverines' game plan being heading into this game? Sam mentioned before the break the turnovers, the interceptions that the Wisconsin QB has been guilty of. Do you guys think that Michigan's just going to load the box and try to get this kid to throw, maybe entice him to more interceptions? And then when my Wolverines are on offense, do you guys think it's pretty clear and obvious that the Badgers are going to try to test the freshman QB, Peters, and see what he's got? Thanks for your time. Love the show. Go Blue.
Well, I think the latter question depends heavily on whether Dakota Dixon gets to play. So that's one of their veteran safeties. He's replaced in the lineup by a walk-on last week, and he's kind of iffy this weekend. So if you do have a walk-on safety, that might prevent you from getting as aggressive as some other Michigan opponents have been, because if you expose that guy to a Chris Evans or to a Caron Higdon, then maybe that's going to be a big play against you. And Dixon is a very good box safety. He's a very good run defender. So that might hamper Wisconsin's aggressiveness. On the other side of the ball, I expect Don Brown just to be Don Brown. He's going to load up in the front. There's going to be a deep safety. He's going to run a bunch of blitzes. He's going to try to heat up the quarterback and get him making bad decisions, and that's what he does in every game all year.
Yeah, 12 interceptions on the season.
Yeah. I think it's going to look defensively somewhat similar from both points of view. I mean, I think Wisconsin sees that Michigan has trouble on pass pro, and Wisconsin can rush the passer. That's something they've done well all year, and I think they're going to come after Michigan, and I think Michigan's do the same thing to Wisconsin. They're going to try and come after him. They're going to try and put pressure on Hornibrook, force mistakes, and I think both defenses will be doing the same thing in that context.
Well, both offenses will be doing the same thing. Two tight ends, fullback, go for it.
Yeah, this game is being pitched inside. Not pitched, but the way that they're setting it up is who's the tougher team. I mean, it's lining up against the guy across from you, who's who's the stronger, tougher guy. That is what this game is being built as, or how this game is being built to the players. And as much as we get into the X's and O's analysis, I mean, you mirror images of one another. They may have issues in the passing game for different reasons. You look at Wisconsin; they have injuries. Michigan has youth and injuries too, but youth and inexperience at play out there right now. In some positions, Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do, Eddie. You nailed it. They are going to try to force Michigan to beat them throwing the football. Craig made the point before we went to the break. And if they can't pose a legitimate downfield threat in this game, it's going to be an extremely tough road to hoe. I mean, they're going to have to challenge them some down there to make them respect it.
Yeah, and we saw in the Maryland game, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones he's running a post route and there's not a safety on the planet, and he just gets missed. Yeah. So those opportunities are going to be there against Wisconsin, because every team is going to have those flat-footed safeties who are looking for the run, and you just got to actually hit the guy, which nobody has done so far. Uh-huh. So
none of our quarterbacks
all three of them. It's just like they've got DPJ repellent.
How good is Josh Jackson from Iowa? Is he just
probably not as good as the six picks in the last 2 weeks make him seem, right?
The second pick was
bounced off the guy's hand.
Yeah, because I mean, you figure you just look at it and you look how badly, you know, Hornibrook has looked. You know, when it comes to ball security in some of these games, think, boy, if Iowa can get a couple of pick sixes on him, with the suffocating coverage that Michigan comes with,
I think it's more likely. Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, when I was watching the Maryland game, I was like, Michigan's going to get a pick six, which made the first half pretty exciting when Long got that one in the end zone and then missed a cutback for a pick six. I thought, even from watching Hornibrook last year, I thought he was decent. I don't think he's great. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of these picks are dumb luck or bad passes. I'm sure some combination of both, but... you know, really, I mean, it's the running game. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is getting 7 yards per carry. That cannot happen against Michigan.
Who, incidentally, is a better back than Saquon Barkley, just as a footnote.
Is Bryce Love better, too?
They're about the same.
Oh, come on, man.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. So a lot of talk and hand-wringing by Michigan fans. About, and this is not a Jim thing, it's just a Michigan thing over the past, 12, 13 years. What's the last time they went on the road and beat a ranked opponent, Ira? You have that stat committed to memory, do you not?
2006, Sam, against Notre Dame.
That question was posed to the guys on the teams, like, you know, hey, what? Michigan hasn't beaten a ranked team. It's like,
I
was like in elementary school. How does that apply to me here? Is that a tangible factor to any of you guys in this game?
No. They're a pass interference penalty from getting it done at Ohio State last year. Like, I mean, what is...
The players is like, okay. Like, how does that matter for us here and now?
Here's the reality. It's hard for any team, even good teams, to beat ranked teams on the road. Because if you're playing a good team on the road, it's a hard game. And so I'll bet if you looked at even really good programs, they don't have necessarily a great record against ranked teams on the road. So this one, first of all, you may not even play that many games. And secondly, when you do... You know, the odds are good you're going to have a hard time. I mean, again, this week, didn't Auburn win?
Yeah, Georgia and Notre Dame found out exactly how hard it is to go on the road.
Notre Dame goes down to Miami. Was that a close game? I don't think so.
No, it was not.
And so it's just hard to beat a good team on the road.
So guys, I ask you a very general question. Let me be more specific with my how good is Wisconsin question. Does this really look like a playoff team? Does Wisconsin really look like a playoff team to you guys?
No.
Yes.
Why no? Why yes?
Because they haven't played anybody, and their quarterback throws a lot of picks, and I just doubt their overall talent level. Like, they're good for the Big Ten West. They're good for the Big Ten. I mean, they're going to be a challenge for Michigan. But is Michigan anywhere near a playoff team? No. Is Wisconsin? Probably not.
So, I mean... I think this Wisconsin team's good. They were 54th in offensive efficiency by my adjusted yards per play last year. They're 18th this year. The defense is 8th. I mean, they're a quality top 10 team. They're not going to be a favorite against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. But look at Michigan, too. Like, yeah. I mean, the fact that they've got ranked for the first time in the College Football Playoff Committee this week is a joke. And they should have been ranked.
No, it's not. Who have they beaten?
What?
Who have they beaten? Who's Michigan beaten?
Everyone. Florida. I guess Florida's not that good. I mean,
Florida is like one of the worst teams in the country.
They just got beaten by Missouri.
They got took to the woodshed.
And Missouri lost 35-3 to Purdue, and Purdue took the gas off the pedal at halftime.
But so we beat Purdue.
That's our best win.
I mean, if Ty Isaac doesn't fumble against Michigan State and they win that toss-up game, like, I mean, they're probably like 10th in the nation in this.
But that's not what they're ranking on, man.
It's really hard to say because, I mean, if you look at Wisconsin's numbers, they're really, really good. They're Final Four good. The problem is...
He just said they were at average of 13th. That's not Final Four.
Well, I mean, my numbers are a little different because I look at net yards per pass attempt, and their net yards per pass attempt is off the charts.
Yeah, but you don't factor in picks, do you?
I don't factor in picks because I view those as essentially random.
There's a lot of randomness
in
that.
And so, but for me, their numbers are great. On the other hand, they haven't played anyone really and no one on the road at all. I mean, I have a friend in Madison. He said, "Oh, they played BYU." And I said, "BYU? I mean, what are they this year? 2-9, 2-8? They're terrible. They're one of the worst teams in the country." And so I don't, you know, if you look at their schedule, there's nothing there. And they certainly won't play anyone on the road all year, and they won't play anyone on the road until they play a neutral game, presumably against Ohio State, or that would be my assumption.
So a word or two about the Wisconsin defense. I was very bullish on them last year with their linebacking core. I thought it was the best in the country. And you come back this year, a couple of those guys you lose to the NFL. All Watt does is go to Pittsburgh, and it's like, man, you know, another Watt's going to be really good in the league. They were at least coming back with Sitchy. And felt like, all right, you know, they have at least one of those playmakers back, and he goes down before the season starts. I remember vividly, so I want to give you guys an opportunity to take a bow. You guys, it's not going to be that big a deal. They're going to miss him. Yeah. They're going to miss him at all. Wisconsin's still going to roll, and they've rolled defensively, so you guys were right.
Well, I mean, they have a never-ending pile of linebackers. They got T.J. Edwards, who's excellent, especially in coverage. So that's... The tight ends across the middle are going to be a more difficult ask this week than in previous weeks. And I hate one of their corners because he wears a hoodie. And that just drives me crazy. It's just like, is not aerodynamic. Why are you doing that? Stop it.
He's cold, man. Come on.
He wears a hoodie. And like I watched him play Indiana, and he's just grabbing Simi Cobbs every which way on every play.
Everyone grabs Simi Cobbs all year long. I mean, because no one can check him.
There's a way to jam him legally like David Long does. And this guy just doesn't care. He's just like, I'm going to grab you all over the place. And he gets called for like three different pass interference calls. Should probably get three more. And I'm preparing. Prepare for that thing that happened to Donovan Peoples-Jones against Maryland to happen about six times, get called three times. His name is Matt Harris.
Did we get a call on the pass interferences in the Maryland game?
We got one. Yeah, we got one on, like, there was a deep shot to the Peoples-Jones down the sideline that was actually well thrown, and the guy got there about half second early.
Okay. Yep.
And DJ was not pleased with that call, and I was like...
Well, but I mean, they didn't call the one on the first drive.
There were two.
The two on the first drive. Yeah, two. Which were far more flagrant than the one they actually called later. Yeah. So it's like, what are you doing? I don't know.
Well, and there was a blatant hole at a point of attack on one of their long runs early in the second half that drove me nuts.
Yeah, McCray was just, like, he's obviously very relevant to the play. He obviously is being held, and they're just like,
They're down 28-0.
I mean, Michigan got away with their fair share of stuff in this game because the referees were very bad both ways. But
Who's roughing? Do we know?
It's a depressing state of situation.
Wait, do we want O'Neal as the underdog in this game?
You know, I think the Big Ten is even more corrupt than
all right,
NCAA.
Let's pause there because I was going to ask you guys, do you believe in a conspiracy theory that is being forwarded in Michigan circles? So chew on that. There's this thought that, hey, the Big Ten really wants a playoff team. Wisconsin is the best bet.
Of course
And
they
so
do.
They're going to move heaven and earth to make sure Wisconsin wins this game.
Delaney wants his $20 million. Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online and WTKA.com. You're live here inside the Emden Studios. Phone lines are wide open. Before we go to them, got to ask you guys, conspiracy theory. Wisconsin, they're the Big Ten's best bet, so the theory goes. So the Big Ten is going to do what it has to to make sure that Wisconsin makes it. Craig, sounds like you buy that.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that...
Don't encourage him.
I think it's, let me put it this way, it is unlikely that Wisconsin will get anything that even vaguely resembles dubious officiating in this game or against Ohio State. I think it's highly unlikely that the Big Ten is going to make sure they have the best opportunity possible, because lots of money is involved, and when lots of money is involved, that's what happens. And that's how I see it.
You don't seem to subscribe
to that.
Come on.
Come on. Like, they're inept. Never assume malice when you can whatever incompetence, et cetera.
Are you quoting someone? Like,
I don't remember.
Incompetent but not corrupt.
Very incompetent. Holy, holy pants, man. There is half dozen things in this game that were just boggling to me.
But not corrupt.
No, well, half of them were like to Michigan's benefit. Although there is, you remember that play where they're Maryland's down, they're near the goal line, and they try to throw a pass, and it's to nobody. And then on the replay, there's this kind of magnificent, like, hold from Levert Hill, who's just like, you can't go anywhere. And
yeah, that was the way that Glenn Mason actually saw, because he on the right, Donovan Peoples-Jones play, he was like, oh, I don't see anything.
But
like,
what Glenn Mason didn't see is that Levert Hill had just been blatantly, like, blocked by another wide receiver. So this confluence of ineptness, that there should have been a penalty on Levert Hill and there should have been an OPI on Maryland at the same time, and both of them were just like, both of these extraordinarily obvious fouls were ignored. And I was just like,
So, there's no reason for Glenn Mason to exist.
That's correct.
Here's what I know. So they come up with numbers, and this probably would make you feel good for everything. So they have analytics on all the refs. They know what refs call target.
Michigan does?
Absolutely.
Oh, really? That's fascinating.
Good.
I would love to see those.
They know what refs are more likely to call targeting.
Yeah.
What refs have a penchant for calling PIs. Yeah. I mean, they have all of these things broken down to a T. Now,
hasn't worked very well.
What do you do? So you have this information. This is kind of my question. Okay. What do you do? Ref Ed is more likely to call targeting. So do I tell Brian? So Brian, in this game, make sure
you don't target.
You don't target. I mean, how do you?
On that note, I feel like the defense has done a very good job of not being over aggressive. And yeah, I'm talking about Devin Bush. I think they've done a good job. Targeting or not, like just as an overall defensive coaching thing.
Yeah, I was just throwing that out
thing,
as a random example.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I think more of pass interference calls.
Well, put it this way. I guess my point in bringing it up is whoever officiates this game, they're going to have a very good idea of what their track record is and whether or not they're deviating from what has been determined as convention for them. So
yeah, I'd be interested to know whether that data is just, you know, gotten from play by play, or whether they actually have people watching every Big Ten game to figure out the context of every call, because that matters.
I don't know that. I just know they have the data.
I mean, that's great.
They have compiled
that is
some
what
of that data.
A top level college football.
I don't think
team
the program
do.
Should be encouraging Craig either.
I guarantee you, no one in the program is encouraging.
That's good to hear.
No, there's no doubt about that one. I mean, I told you, I sent a note saying, hey, we should find Jerry Burns, and they said we decline that offer.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones real quick. 734-998-1050. Talk to Don and Ipsy. Don, what's up?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Hey. Doing great.
Good.
There's a comment and a question. You know, my comment is that, you know, we had me and some of the guys, and you know, looking at a lot of film, and you know, Harbaugh's offense, you know, just kind of it's simple but complex. You know, it's misdirection, it's straight action, it's play action in the simplest form. However, it just doesn't allow for a lot of a margin of error, and it's not an offense that can help mask deficiencies upon your offensive line or different parts. Guys have got to do their job, and, you know, a lot of one-man routes, two-man routes, everything has got to go perfect, and there has to be a stubborn patience to kind of get to that point where it can happen week in, week out. So, and he's had success with it. So I just got to believe that it's coming. Just maybe not this season, but it's taking shape. But my question is it seems to me that offensively, again, that when Michigan's first 15 to 20 scripted plays are on time and on schedule, they're more liberal with play calling. It has a more aggressive tone to it, and they tend to play freer on that side of the ball. As to when they don't, i.e. the fumble at Michigan State, when Ty, fumbled, then it seems like they rein it in, it's closer to the vest, and it becomes kind of reach in the bag and see what works for the rest of the game, and it kind of bogs down. That's my question. I mean, would you guys agree with that, or do you get a different take? Thanks, guys.
I mean, to some extent, yes. The Michigan State game, it's kind of difficult to suss out what is Michigan being conservative on play calling because they don't have stuff in the bag, and what's because they just don't have the personnel to execute a lot right now. But the last 3 weeks, I think you see that pattern where the first plays, the scripted plays early, go very well. Michigan gets up a couple touchdowns, but then the reason that the offense kind of goes back to a bunch of basic stuff is that they're up 14-0 on Rutgers. Like, what do they need to show the rest of this game? Not much. So hopefully we're going to see a little bit more, not necessarily razzle-dazzle, but like tweaks that get Michigan chunk plays against Wisconsin because they're breaking tendencies and putting stuff on a film that they haven't before.
To some extent, this is what I've been calling redcoats versus revolutionaries. And we're definitely redcoats. I mean, we're marching in lines and we're doing our thing. But that can win if you execute at a high level, that's for sure. So, I mean, and we're not an on-the-fly read option team with guys making decisions as based on what they see in front of them. So it's just a different kind of football.
So let's get to the nitty-gritty, starting with you, Ed Fang. You've crunched the numbers, I assume, already. How do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I have Wisconsin by 8, pretty much in tune with the markets.
Craig Ross?
Alas, I have Wisconsin by 2 touchdowns.
2 touchdowns?
Jeez. Yeah. We need some strict schedule adjustments there.
Yeah, I know. Craig. I couldn't adjust the schedule by enough because the Michigan schedule doesn't look all that great either in retrospect.
Brian Cook.
I mean, I think it's going to be close. Like, I think you're going to see a rock fight, and it's all about which quarterback makes either a big play or a critical error. And, even though Brandon Peters is a redshirt freshman, he's been very sheltered. You're looking at a guy with 12 picks this year. Mm-hmm. And he gets 12 picks, and he's usually got like 18 attempts by the end of the game. So if Michigan can get that plus one, maybe plus two in turnovers, then I think they win this game. Don't necessarily expect that. Like, I think, the default expectation is that Michigan loses this game by 4 points. But all it takes is one kind of field flip and play, and then they're in it.
Well, I like the idea of a rock fight, though. Bo once asked me if a game was going to be, quote, a meat grinder or not, and maybe that's the same thing. And in a rock fight, I think we got to.
Man,
dance.
You haven't been reading my site because I've been calling everything a rock fight
really?
All year.
No, yeah. I read every word.
This is whatever slugfest, meat grinder, whatever, however you describe, two teams standing or two guys standing in the middle of the ring throwing haymakers. That's this game to me. An absolute slugfest between two
And you've liked
two
Michigan all year long on this
in
game.
In this game. Never thought they would win the Penn State game. But this game, I think they match up well.